OU Texas has gone pretty well for you guys the last couple years, hasn't it?
In a world where only the strong survive, there comes a time when the only way to settle the score is a one-on-one battle to the finish. Two entrepreneurs enter, but only one of them leaves. It's the Entrepreneur Showdown with Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks. Now, on to the showdown.
That's right. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Showdown. My name is Dan Franks. Across the way, that's my partner, Joe Cassandra. And today, we look at a few interesting topics. The first being, do you or don't you need a co-founder in your startup? I think Joe and I might have differing opinions about this. Can't wait to see what you think. And then we're going to talk about hiring employees and replacing yourself in your own business. When's the right time? When's the wrong time? And to expand on that discussion, we're going to bring on Ryan Dobbs, who goes by the Unreasonable Entrepreneur. He started multiple startups, replacing himself in his own business, hiring employees to do his work for him. So we'll see what he thinks about the whole thing.
That's right. You don't want to miss it. But first, make sure you head on over to iTunes to leave us your feedback. And while you're at it, make sure you subscribe so you never miss another episode. We're releasing them constantly. You want to be on top of that. And all the show notes and all the links that we have for Ryan, they're going to be over at entrepreneurshowdown.com. Make sure you hit us up there. And with that, let's get to round one.
Round one.
And we are back with round one of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Today we are going to look at, do you need a co-founder? And I guess this is an interesting thing because we're doing a joint thing right now. So I'm sure we'll be pushing for partnerships more than co-founding. But I guess a big point in with starting your own thing by yourself is there's like a loneliness factor after a while. You start to, I guess, second guess yourself. You don't have people there just chatting normally with you. You're by yourself trying to build everything. And usually people you work with, anyone you're trying to network, may not even be in the same state. And we found that too. We haven't met anyone or interviewed anyone yet that's in Texas. They're all across the world pretty much. And so you have to deal with that loneliness factor. And I know that you had your real estate business and did you run into that loneliness part while you were running that?
Well, and I think it's interesting because there's a difference here between having a co-founder or a partner, however you want to say it, and having a support system. Because having a co-founder is someone that actually has a vested interest in what you're doing versus just having a network of, you know, like-minded people who might be there to bounce ideas off of or something like that. But they're not actually there, someone that has a super vested interest in helping you other than, you know, just the kindness of their heart. So no, I didn't have anybody there. The style of my real estate investing lent itself to having lots of people to work with. I was actually buying and selling contracts of houses. So I had buyers that were buying my contracts from me that I worked with, you know, multiple times. But those were people I worked with very often in my business. But we were both on opposite sides of the sale. So we were competing with one another to get different, you know, we had different goals. He wanted to get it cheapest. I wanted to sell it for the most. So that would be the closest thing I had to a partner or a co-founder just because we did a lot of deals together. So no, I didn't have anybody, and it's kind of hard to stay motivated. You know, you've got maybe the wife at home or the girlfriend at home or the husband, the spouse, whatever. And those are people who very oftentimes don't have the same interests as you. So while I might come home and have a challenge that I would like to bounce off somebody that might be able to help me. The wife's not super interested in that. They want to know if the money's coming in that month or not, but they're not super interested in, if you're sharing your highs or your lows or bouncing ideas off of them or brainstorming with them, like someone that was actually in the trenches with you would.
But then you don't have someone that's arguing with all your decisions and arguing with your ideas because you get to make all those because you're the only one that's running it. You're the one with all the interest in it. So if you don't have to worry about, okay, if I do this, will my partner get mad? Will he get upset and maybe start slacking off or something like that. You don't have to worry about that because you get to do it all yourself. You get to make those decisions.
Yeah, and there's a level of freedom that comes with being on your own and doing your own thing, and that can be good or bad. And I think that's somewhat of a personality thing. A lot of people are self-starters and can do these things on their own with no problems. But there are those people out there that need somebody there. They need that reinforcement and that encouragement. So, I don't know, what do you think you fall? Do you think you can go either way? Do you think one is better or worse for you personally?
I think I'm more of, I like working with someone. I like having someone that's interested in the same stuff that you can, like you said, share ideas and everything like that. And that you, it's like you're creating a mastermind type thing, just like a mini one, but you're able to have ideas and then they have ideas and then you're able to meld those together. And it's kind of like a think and grow rich type thing. He's big on that. Basically not trying to do everything yourself, but having other people to think about different ideas with and come up with solutions. And, I guess it's like a human companionship too. Like everyone wants to have, wants to share in success and failures with someone. That's why I like Pity Loves Company, because when you're down on the ground, like you want someone else to be there with you, because I don't know, it's just like a human thing.
Well, and take us for instance. Since this is our most recent venture working on this podcast together, you or I, both of us had expressed desire once we, you know, got to know each other and got things figured out. We both found that we both had desires to have a podcast and do something like this, but neither one of us had done it on our own. I know you had some little ventures into it, but nothing substantive at all.
And a lot of that was, like, I started little things, but I always just kind of, like, got bored because it's just me and
Is it an enjoyment aspect? Is it an accountability partner aspect? What is it that caused you not to follow through with those, but this one you're able to?
I guess somewhat accountability, but I think more just my personality. I just enjoy being around other people and discussing ideas when, like, I mean, like you were talking about, I didn't know anyone that was close to me that I could see face to face, that I could talk about these type of things or share those ideas or work with any of them. They were all online across the world or whatever. And so it's just kind of like, I don't want to be just doing something by myself. I get bored easily.
So, I mean, it's a fun aspect too. I mean, it's an enjoyment aspect. And I think I agree with that, because you and I, when we first started talking, we worked together for a while and didn't realize that each other, we had these similar interests. And I don't remember how it came about, but once we figured out, it was like, you know who Pat Flynn is? So do I. Holy crap.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then, what about this guy? Oh, yeah, I listen to him too. And, like, immediately it's like, now I can do something with this person. Like, yeah. I've had all these ideas, but there was really nobody to bounce them off of. You know, there's online forums and online groups and you know, masterminds and some meetup groups around.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, you and I had the opportunities to use all those, but it took, you know, being in person and knowing each other one-on-one to actually pursue something. But we did want in this talk to kind of go over some things that if you are starting something on your own, and this is notes that you and I could probably take, because we both have expressed just now that we didn't do anything on our own to the extent that we're doing it now. So we did kind of compile some pointers or things you can do if you are on your own to succeed. And the first one is finding a support group. Because you don't have somebody there by your side day in and day out, somehow align yourself with people, whether they're, you know, peers or somebody that has these similar interests as you, that you can bounce ideas off of. And you can, even if it is one of these online forums or meetup groups that I just put down, that's better than being completely isolated.
So these support groups, what are they? Are they in the same industry, or are they working like your competitor? What are they doing?
You know, and I mentioned this with my real estate thing. These are people that, maybe they are your competitors, or maybe they are doing the same thing you are, but you can't have that mentality of not wanting to socialize and have people to bounce ideas off of just because you're afraid they might be competing with you for the same thing. I mean, I'd go to these real estate meetups that had literally sometimes hundreds of people that all lived within a, you know, 50-mile radius of me, all of us doing the exact same thing. And really, you know, we're looking to buy these distressed houses, all of us trying to buy the same houses. You know, there's in every neighborhood, there's a couple houses that might be prospects, and we were all on the hunt for where these houses were.
So
and how to turn them up.
are you able to build relationships with those people, or is it just too competitive that you don't want to build relationships with them?
That's what this comes down to. You ask, you know, is this support group, are they going to be your peers? Are they going to be your competition? That's kind of an individual choice. But for me, they were people that I was able to bounce ideas off of. So even though they were competition, I felt like if I was going to learn from anybody or, you know, maybe give back to teaching anybody, it was going to have to be with my competition. So it was just a personal choice of if I wanted those people in my environment or not. So it's tough. I mean, it's tough to get into a business when you might be, you know, a business by yourself and looking for people to help you out along the way, knowing that they could be the exact same people that you're, you know, you're fighting over this last deal with. So it's tough, but it's one of the options. If you are on your own, you're going to have to find something. You don't want to be, you know, holed up in a room somewhere by yourself, never seeing the outside world with nobody to bounce ideas off of, or else it's going to be detrimental to the business.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that, because like people like MJ DeMarco, he would just spend hours just coding in his room by himself while like he could hear all his friends out partying while he's trying to build up limos.com. And I think it's more just a personality thing, because maybe he's more, I feel like he is more introverted, that he'd be more like that to want to, because he never mentioned anything about partnerships or anything like that. He just always said about building and finding ideas and everything like that.
Don't think he had any outside influences or anyone that maybe was in the same field as him? Not necessarily the limo business.
Well, he had
business.
Competitors. I mean, he mentioned that he had like 12, 15 competitors, but he never talked about people that he directly worked with on the idea.
So I'm not talking about direct competitors, but I'm talking about, did he have anybody who was an advisor, a mentor, a consultant? Like, at some level, there's got to be somebody that either shows you the ropes or is just there to be a soundboard. I mean, I feel like maybe he's the outlier.
Maybe it's just a discipline thing. Like, if you're willing to work a couple years by yourself, struggling, and you hate your life, but you're building something good, and then you end up being successful, and then when you have all the money, everyone wants to be your friend. Maybe that's just a discipline thing that most people don't have. And I know a lot of these people, they make it sound like starting a business is so, I guess everyone, they make it sound like everyone should do it, which I don't think is true, but it's a discipline thing, that you have to have that discipline. And I think having someone there all the time that is struggling with you, and you're like, we sharing ideas, kind of like you're building a mini second family type thing. I think that's something that you need to have, and you need to have that. It's beyond a support group. It's someone who's actually, it's like in football. If you ever played, I played high school football, and there were kids on there before we played football. Like, I couldn't stand, but once you're out there and you're all getting your heinies whipped by the big schools, I mean, you suddenly appreciate each other more, and you build a bond just from that, just because you both went through that. You both got your butts kicked. It automatically built that relationship.
Okay, so let's say playing off that football theme and wins and losses, and, you know, having those people by your side and having a win. The next step we had, if you are going into this alone, if you are going into this startup business without a founder or without a co-founder, is to celebrate your wins before moving on. So even if it's little wins, take time to step back, take a deep breath, and celebrate, whether it's just give yourself a day off or an evening off, or whether it's go out to a dinner just to do something different and kind of reward yourself. Because, you know, you or I, when we log into the stats for our podcast and we say, hey, today's our all-time high day, you know, high five kind of thing, that's a little win. We're able to celebrate with each other. But if you're by yourself, you know, you can high five the wall, or you can do something special for yourself, regardless of what it is, free or cost. And I do think this is huge. This is something I had not done in my business. It was just, I kept my nose to the grindstone and kept going. And I don't know if it leads to burnout, but I think just enjoyment of what you're doing, if you have some, you know, small wins that you can kind of reward yourself for, I think that's big.
Well, if you have that mindset where you see the good in everything, and that you can see those small wins, because most people, they don't see those. They're just waiting for the big kahuna.
There's a start and a finish, and they can't see anything in between.
Yeah, exactly. So those small wins, they can motivate you, but that can only go so far before you're back to where you started. And it's like It's like someone who's taking pills and then you get that pill and you have that high, but then you run out of pills and so you need to try and find another pill. And then what happens is you may end up just chasing something that you're not supposed to be chasing. Like we've already talked about with some other guests about finding the right customers and not just spreading out so wide that you're trying to be everyone to everything or everything to everyone.
So you're saying that by celebrating small wins, you might then come to expect those celebrations. And then so the next one, you're going to have to celebrate more to reward yourself again. Is that what you mean with like the taking the pills and then you need a better pill next time once you run out?
Yeah, you need a bigger hit the next time. You can't just have these little ones before you do burn out.
So are you saying it's almost better not to reward yourself because you'll become accustomed to these rewards that you're giving yourself and then that will become the standard and you can never go back? Because I did have some friends that would do that. Every time they flipped a house, they'd go out and have the $1,000 dinner the husband and wife would.
Jeez.
And celebrate. But then after they've done that 10 times in a year, well, that $1,000 dinner, that's not a celebration anymore.
No.
That's just normal.
Yeah.
That's what we do. So now we have to have that $1,000 dinner and go on a cruise. And then if you do that for a year, that's what you do. I mean, I can totally see that point of view. I didn't think about it that way, but if you do celebrate these small wins and grow accustomed to it, that becomes the norm. And you can never go back to just doing something good and being happy with just the thought of doing something good. So that's interesting.
Yeah, that's a different way to take on it. And I'm definitely thinking that, hey, I could start something by myself. I'm not saying I never would. I just enjoy the process more of working with someone than doing it by myself, trying to build something all alone. I mean, when you're by yourself, you're able to be a little more flexible with your time. If you're going to an event like a big new media expo, you don't have to like worry about, well, is my partner going, or we need to both go to like the same places because I don't want to meet someone big and he's not there, whatever. Because if you're by yourself, you're the only one. So yeah, you can go around shaking everyone's hand and your personal brand is going with you. It's not split between two people. So, I mean, there's pros and cons for both. It's a personality thing for me. That's what I'm going to argue. If you have the discipline that you can work by yourself, heads down for a long time, unless you get that quick hit and you're able to soar after a couple months, good for you. But most people aren't. That's not going to happen. If you're able to have that discipline, then great. But sometimes you need someone like accountability partner or someone that you're just going to get your butt kicked with and you're going to have to get up off the ground again with.
Yeah, that's interesting. I kind of feel the same way. But let's go on to this last point. And these are actually all points that we pulled from a Business Insider article that we'll link up to down below. But the last point is more for a larger startup. So kind of we've been talking about our own business ventures, which are online businesses or kind of individual do-it-on-your-own things that we've had experience with. But this last one's more for if you have grown a company to a reasonable size and you have employees. And that's an interesting dilemma because now you're not on your own, but you're still on your own at the top.
You own all the equity. So now you're in a good seat.
You are, but it's still that thing, that idea that, so you've got this company and sure you have employees working for you. So you're no longer physically alone, but you're still alone at the top. And the idea is one of the ways to make it as a solo founder of a company is to set a good culture, a good company culture. Because if you have multiple founders at the top of a company, then a lot of times kind of that best personality that works the best for working with people and working with employees, that's the personality that's going to come through. So if you're the coder that founded a company, you're going to stay in the closet doing your coding, while maybe the guy who has handled all the marketing, who might be a better leader of people, will take control of the company culture and kind of lead it in the right direction. But if you're at the top, you might be the marketer and the coder, and you have to pay special attention to setting the tone at the top as one that will be good for the company in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you've already built yourself up and that you have employees, that sure you're the main founder on paper, but now that you have people working with you, you have other co-founders, for lack of better words. It's like all the people, I forget which company I'm thinking of, but like one guy started it, but then he brought on some guys early on and he called them co-founders, even though they weren't there at the very origin of the idea. He still calls them co-founders, even though they probably somewhat work for him. Once you get past this solo trip, I think it's more of a co-founding thing, even if it's not on paper says these people own any equity in the business.
Yeah, that may be true. I think that this point is something that shouldn't be missed, especially someone that is building a company and planning on growing it, that you need to get on it early on to set this quality culture in your company when you are at the top. So even if it's, you know, you're saying once you have a couple people in the company that you call co-founders and they can help you set the tone of the company, but maybe it's just you and two other people and they're way lower. They're not even in position to be called co-founders, but you still want to set a tone of the culture that's going to be favorable and beneficial to them so that if it does grow laterally, you know, at the bottom and there are no other co-founders to come on, or if once the company's established, you do have these co-founders, you do want people that are going to, or you do already want to have a culture in place that's going to be beneficial to everybody.
Well, everyone wants a good culture. So we'll definitely link up the article below. You can look through it, see if you're trying to start something yourself, or maybe you're thinking now that you need a partner. You can go both ways on it. We just decided to hash it out so you can get a good idea of where you stand, and hopefully that helped out. So we're not going to waste any more time. We're going to get right on to round two.
Round two.
That's right. It's time for round number two here on the Entrepreneur Showdown. And in today's round two, we're going to discuss a couple podcast episodes from Ryan Dobbs. He has the podcast The Unreasonable Entrepreneur at theunreasonableentrepreneur.com. And Ryan had two podcast episodes recently that somewhat coincided with one another. The first one was about strategically removing yourself from your business. So kind of stepping away from your business and putting someone in your place that can run it as good or maybe even better than you. And then the second podcast episode that he did kind of back to back with it was hiring employees. So to me, when I listen to one and then the other, and they seem to work together, because obviously if you're going to step away from your business but expect it to continue to run, someone's going to have to fill in for you. So that kind of brings up the point of hiring employees. And these two topics, I'm not trying to be sensitive here, but they're a little touchy for me. I get a little emotional when I think of this. Kind of my most successful venture thus far in my entrepreneurial journeys has been my real estate business that I had at one time. And I guess you could say it's still legally operating, and I still get some calls that I follow up on from time to time. But the reality is my real estate business kind of got out of control in a good way when I had it going. It just got too much for me to handle. I had done too much marketing. I had too many incoming calls, too many leads that I couldn't follow up with myself. So to make a long story short, I went through a series of virtual assistants and ended up finding one that was really good. But about the same time that I got her fully integrated into the business and stepping in and replacing me somewhat in the business from at least day-to-day roles, about that time is when the market here in Dallas, the real estate market, turned over and turned more into a seller's market. So the investors kind of got the tables turned on them, and it wasn't as easy to go out and find great investment properties anymore. So the money stopped coming in for me, but I had just gotten this assistant into place in my business. And this is something that Ryan talks about in the second interview, the hiring employees, the smart way is the name of the podcast. And I guess my part that I missed out on was the smart way, because I spent all this time to train this assistant and get her up and going, that I felt like maybe it was just, she was just getting a slow start, and that's why the business maybe wasn't working.
But that's what he says to do. He says to invest a lot of time training these people so you can step away. But it sounds like you did that and it still didn't work out for you.
Yeah, and I guess it's hard to say if maybe I stepped away too early or if it was just horrible coincidence of bad timing that the market turned at the same time I implemented this. It's really hard to tell because I did towards the end there kind of put myself back into the business and try to step back in. But by then it was kind of too late as far as keeping the business going the way I wanted it to. I felt like on the front end of the business, I was able to dedicate a lot more time to it. But for whatever reason, the way the market had turned, there was a lot more time and effort that needed to be dedicated to it than I was able to anymore, which was the reason I put the assistant in place in the first place. But yeah, so I have experience with doing this in a negative way. And we are, I forgot to mention, we have Ryan Dobbs actually coming on the show later in the main event to talk about this. But I'm interested, do you have any experience on hiring assistants, whether it's like a contract worker or a full-time VA or anything like that, Joe?
No, I don't. I'm one of those people that I like to do a lot of things myself, which is probably, I don't work the smart way like he was talking about. But the thing is, like, with people who like to start these type of things, like, especially when you're getting it off the ground, it's your, I guess, baby. And so you're worried so much about if people are going to take it and then turn it into a direction that you don't want to go, or slowly start taking it from you where you don't really have, I guess, that type of control anymore. I'm still, since I don't have experience in it, all I can see is kind of, hey, you're looking for a cheap way to help you out or do something on the side, find someone to do it for a couple dollars an hour to sort through your email and all that stuff. So since I'm not in the trenches with that, I don't see the full benefits of it. I see it as more, hey, you're trying to get some cheap labor out of some people overseas. So, I mean, that's stuff I want to ask them about. How do you feel about that stuff? Because I'm sure there are people on this side of the pond that would be happy to work on certain things, but we're deciding to cut those costs even further and go overseas. And I don't know if, I think that's a pretty hot topic. If, hey, should we all be doing that? Should we all be moving all our, I guess, admin work, all our phone calls, whatever, overseas? Is that how you feel?
Well, I think there's an important distinction to make, because I know Ryan did at some point mention that he had some overseas virtual assistants, but I also think that he did have some people here in the States that was working for him as well. And actually my full-time VA that I had for the extended period of time, she was actually in the United States as well. Before her, I did have about 2 months of a Filipino VA, and that just didn't work out for various reasons. Language barrier was a little bit of a problem, and just lack of applicable skills to the industry. Whereas the VA that I brought in that was in the States, cost me significantly more, which could have been one of the other problems, more than I had originally budgeted for. And I thought the benefits would outweigh the increased cost. And in the end, it didn't. But so what you're saying is you think that maybe it's just not worth it, that if you're going to start this business because it's something that you're truly passionate about and you're fully invested in, the last thing you want to do is then turn the reins over to somebody else who might have a completely different idea for things. Even if you try to convey this message of what you're looking for, you're saying that since it is a different person and you're not in full control, things could go in the wrong direction very quickly.
Well, especially because you see and you hear from like Tim Ferriss and all those people who write about outsourcing, Chris Ducker, that, hey, slowly start pulling yourself away and give them more responsibility. And then I guess you like check on them every so often. Like I said, I'm not invested in outsourcing, so I'm not sure all the kinks of it. But then if you're giving them, I guess, the face and the character of the company, wouldn't that go against when you first started out, isn't your vision? Are you trying to implant that into someone else, or are you just kind of letting them take free rein and try and run the company themselves without you there?
Well, I think that's kind of where one of the balancing acts comes in, because you don't want to be that micromanager for multiple reasons. One, because you're not making it an enjoyable or a favorable environment for the worker, but also because if you're going to be micromanaging it, you might as well just be on the ground floor doing it yourself. So that's kind of one thing. So if you're going to be micromanaging it to make sure it's going in the exact direction you want, you're spending too much time already. So that kind of defeats the purpose. And then the other side of it is, of course, if you do give, you do want the employee or the worker to have somewhat, some level of creativity. And that's, I guess, where the due diligence process comes in at the beginning, to maybe make sure, like I did, I wanted somebody that had real estate experience. So I was willing to spend a little extra time finding that long-term VA who had the real estate experience, who at least somewhat had a same idea for my vision. And I did try to impart my ideas and my thoughts on her at the beginning, but then towards the end, I let her kind of take things over. And it's really hard because you don't want to, for instance, she was taking a lot of phone calls, doing a lot of outbound calls as well. And there's no way for me to tell exactly how she's doing. You know, I could either do mystery calls or, you know, give her a, or give her an internal number to call and kind of test her out. But I didn't want to be the micromanager that was recording all the calls and.
But isn't that just stressing you out that you don't know what this person is doing? I mean, like you said, you did some due diligence on it, but you don't know what the face she's putting on for, I guess, all
yeah,
the
that,
people.
That stressed the crap out of
exactly.
me. That did.
So is it really worth having that sort of outsourcing for cheap type of thing just so you have all the stress when you're, especially since you were just building it up, like it wasn't running like a Fortune 500 type thing. It was still coming off the ground, and all you're doing is stressing about what is she doing? Is she doing the best she can? Is she doing anything at all? So,
well, and that's what, after, you know, listening to Ryan's opinion and kind of taking a step back after everything fell apart and looking at it from the outside in, I definitely wasn't ready for it, because while I say I wasn't micromanaging, which means I wasn't, you know, directing her every move, I was looking very closely from the outside in and making sure I kept tabs on everything. So I was investing a lot of my time and efforts into what she was doing, even though maybe she wasn't fully aware of it. So I really wasn't fully utilizing this tool that I had in place in the employee. That's kind of a problem. I do want to go back to what you were talking about, where you were saying, if this is, you know, your dream and your passion, that why would you want to turn over the reins to somebody? Do you feel any different if you're maybe a business owner that's starting up a bunch of these smaller niche businesses, and you have a bunch of businesses going and none of them are necessarily your passion? Maybe you have that MJ DeMarco trying to fill the voids in the market, something that the market's looking for, and that's what causes you to start these businesses. Does that make you feel any different about putting other people in place to run those, just to systemize all these little businesses you have going on?
Well, I guess if it's one of those, you're not, I guess, really excited about it, you just see some gap in there, then I guess maybe it would make sense to fill the seats, fill the cubes with as much cheap labor as you can, just to get it off the ground. But I guess for those who say, this is what I've always wanted to do, I've always wanted to be in this type of niche, but I want to be pulled away from it and just have it kind of run automatically. Well, then how much do you really enjoy it if you're doing that type of thing? When in what you just asked, if it's something that you're not that excited about, but you just say, hey, it's making me a couple bucks a month, might as well just put it on autopilot. Then, I mean, I guess it would make sense to run that through some like VAs and stuff like that. If you don't have like some long-term vision, it's more of just a monthly cash flow that's supplementing your income, then yeah. I mean, I think a long-term solution, I don't see how that could be a long-term solution for you.
Well, that kind of goes directly against what Ryan's doing. Ryan started his career as a personal trainer, and then he worked his way through a couple different job changes and firings and business startups to the point now where he has his own gym that's very successful. But once he got the gym off the ground and got it fully functioning and you know, turning a profit month after month, he wanted to follow his passion, which was teaching and coaching and business teaching. And I think he actually does some real estate coaching as well. And he felt like that was his calling. So he actually put employees and assistants and whatever in place to run his gym job, because he wanted to follow his passion. So you're saying maybe...
Well, is that a long-term solution for him? Is that what he...
I think the gym is. From hearing him talk, I think the gym is what's making the money and keeping the food on the table and keeping the lights on. But he is, you know, somewhat profitable doing his coaching program as well. But I don't think either one of them, with the amount of time he's putting towards the coaching program, I don't think he could personally put that amount of time to run the gym. But if the gym wasn't running, he might not be able to fully support his family just by the coaching program. So they kind of both need to be going on to keep everybody happy.
So then what's his long-term plan? Is it the coaching or is it the gym? That's the thing. Is what's he more passionate about? Is the gym his long-term solution, or is he just putting bodies there to supplement his income, like you said, to put food on the table? That's something that we can ask him about, and and see what his thoughts are on that. And I think one of his stories is that he was working at one gym, but then he was like consulting at another gym, and his main job, they found out about that and they didn't like that, so they fired him.
Yeah.
So I mean, that'd be another thing to ask about, like, what should you be doing, these like conflict of interest type things? Because I mean that's definitely, and you hear that as a no-no in most ventures, to be conflicting with your main day job. Should you be doing something on the side in the same industry? And I think that's a no-no, and I'd be interested to ask him about that and see if that's a good idea for most people nowadays.
Right. Although I do think he might look at it more favorably than maybe someone from the outside, just because that's led him to where he is now, which he seems very happy and passionate about where he is now.
In hindsight, yeah, it looks great. I'm just curious for people now. I mean, how many people should do that or could do that? And he was, I guess he had like, his wife was pregnant and stuff like that. So, I mean, there's a lot going on when that happened. So I guess in hindsight, yeah, it would make, like, oh, that's a great decision I made, when I don't know if he would make that same decision again.
It could have very easily turned out a completely the other way, in his gym venture that he was forced into by getting let go from his previous job could have fallen flat on his face, and then, you know, we wouldn't be talking to him here in a little bit. So those are all questions we can talk to Ryan about. I don't want to push it off any further, because I know Ryan's going to have a lot to say about all this, so we can bounce some of this off of him and quite a bit more. So with that, let's go to Ryan Dobbs in the main event.
It's time for the main event.
That's right, it's main event time here on the Entrepreneur Showdown. And in today's main event, we welcome a man who went from working as a personal trainer at a franchise gym to being homeless with a wife 8 months pregnant, to now owning $1 million a year business. Oh, did I mention all that happened in less than 12 months? That's right. This man now runs his own gym. He doesn't work for someone else's, but he spends most of his time pursuing his true passion, which is coaching others and teaching them to become successful entrepreneurs just like he is. He's known online as the Unreasonable Entrepreneur. Today, our guest in the main event is Ryan Dobbs. Ryan hosts his own podcast called the Unreasonable Entrepreneur Podcast, and he recently did two episodes that Joe and I discussed in round two. One was about replacing yourself in your own business, and the other was about hiring employees. And those are the topics we want to bring Ryan on to talk about today. So without further ado, Ryan, what's going on, man?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, welcome. Now, before we get down into the topic that we brought you on to talk about, let everybody know where they can go to find out more about you and your background.
You can go to unreasonableentrepreneur.com. We do daily, I guess Monday through Friday, we do a daily post on the blog, and then we also do the Unreasonable Entrepreneur Podcast. You can find that on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Swell Radio.
Yeah, and I really like your daily posts, because they're kind of tactical information that a lot of it, some of them's current events, things you might not have heard of, and you're kind of the first to bring it up. And other things are things that you can turn around and do in your business that same day. So I kind of like how useful the information is. It's not just fluff. It's real good information.
Thanks. Appreciate that. A lot of people give me grief for doing the daily post, but, you know, when it really comes down to it, you should be working in your business daily anyway. And if you can get some good information out there and people can digest that and move forward, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah. And I think especially there's a couple schools of thought with that, but, everything I've heard, that especially when you're trying to get something off the ground floor and trying to build something up, you've got to be in it, like you said, every day. And then you can kind of step back later on once you've built that following, and they can anticipate that daily or that, you know, two or three times a week post. But when you're first getting started, it's all about, I think, about volume, quality volume, but volume.
I just enjoy getting out there and interacting with everybody. I mean, apparently I have a lot to say. So, you know, it's not hard for me to put some content together. But, you know, really, when it comes down to it, I mean, if I'm helping one person out there really jumpstart their business or get going, that's what we're here for.
Yeah, awesome. So the thing we brought you to talk on about today is replacing yourself in your business, and you've done that in one or maybe more of your businesses, but one main one, and then also hiring employees to not only take your place but maybe grow your business or expand. So why don't you let us know why you chose these topics to talk about in these particular podcasts? What was going on in your business that had these on the front of mind?
Well, what I've done is basically you told a little bit of my started my business years before that, but I just wasn't there mentally yet. You know, the mind frame, either the fear of loss or fear of change. I mean, it was just too much. So we got going knowing that, you know, as a traditional personal trainer, you're going to work 5 in the morning to 8 at night, 5 days a week minimum if you're busy. So we wanted to fix the problem. So we consciously designed our business to sit down and do it in a way where we knew we were only going to work in our business for a short amount of time. So what we did was we put systems into place from right off the bat to where we could build it based on a franchise mentality instead of just relying on us as the face and the name of the business. So as soon as we were able to start bringing employees in, it was a chance for us to back out and be more of the management role in the entrepreneur mind instead of being the technician working in the business 24/7.
Now, I think one of the arguments Joe brought up with this is if you were not wanting to be fully involved with this business, I think with the gym business in particular, you've pretty much, you said in your podcast, you've been away for months at a time before and just let it run itself. Is there a reason why you don't kind of sell that or cut that loose and then put all your efforts and, you know, whatever money and everything towards what you're doing now? Or is it just a diversification reasoning?
A little bit is because I have bright, shiny object syndrome. And, you know,
yeah, we all do.
You know, I get bored real fast, you know, and there's always that, you know, that pot of gold that comes up. But what really started happening was I got going really fast. I had some really great success and it was all built on relationships. There's really no reason why I could have failed. I mean, I did everything I could. I you know, really studied. I did what I needed to do, and I put 100% of heart and soul and passion behind it. And when people saw that we went from basically homeless on the street with, you know, no opportunities, and instead of rolling over, we jumped in and really started something awesome and had a community and a following and we're making some good money, they wanted to know how we did that because you just don't see that every day. I mean, people roll over. So we wanted to make sure that we started putting information out there. We started with personal trainers and it kind of grew and more people started asking us. So we started kind of getting more and more opportunities coming our way. And I think that's pretty common with any entrepreneurial venture. I mean, as soon as you get going, you start getting pulled in different directions. But, you know, really what it was this thing was making us a ton of money. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I like money. Everybody does. You know, so when it came down, we got a couple of offers to sell it in the first year. And the first one was okay, and it was kind of neat just to get an offer. You know, we turned that down. The second one was pretty substantial. The third one, we're still kind of talking with those people about, you know, an eventual takeover of that business. But if it's working and you have your systems in place and everything is really pretty legit and you can step away but still have your toes in it, you know, if you could jump back in and help out if you needed to, but really you had full rein, you know, why move it or why transfer it if it's just an ATM? So what we've done is we've basically replicated that process through a couple of other business ventures where we're still, you know, think about it kind of like a physical therapist. If you've ever gone to a physical therapist, you have one guy and then you have some assistants that basically run it. You know, and that's the mind frame that we had going into these other business ventures was, yeah, we don't want to give anything up, but we want to be able to, you know, follow our passions and help people out. And if, you know, opportunities came up, we wanted to be able to still take advantage of those without saying, oh, I'm just so busy.
Yeah. So that kind of brings up the point that back to the main topic we're talking about. Your gym business, you put all this effort, you put, you know, it was only a year, but you just put everything you had into it, obviously, and you were super successful, super passionate. What convinced you and what made you comfortable enough to step away from the business and put somebody in your place with, you know, kind of letting go control? You had put so much time and effort and money into this venture. How were you able to step away from it and, you know, stay away for months at a time?
Well, the first part was I pretty much had a nervous breakdown because I was doing too much. And when I put people in place and realized that they were more energized, they were qualified people, and as soon as I turned them loose and removed my bottleneck, they instantly got smarter, that all of a sudden things were going fantastic. And then it was very obvious, you know, as a personal trainer, it's just like any other service business. If you have a clientele of people that you feel like are there for you, you feel 100% tied to that business. And a lot of people feel like, well, it's my name and face on the website. You know, I promote in all the marketing. You know, they come to see me. And then when you put somebody else in place and nothing changes, or, you know, the damage is minimal and you realize that you can focus on the big money tasks in your business and someone can handle some of that day-to-day work, it's the most incredible feeling possible to know that you're not tied down to your business and every day. And if you don't do it, no one's going to do it. You really can get in there and really drive your business forward. And yeah, it is very tough. I mean, let's not be small about that. I mean, I had lots of sleepless nights and lots of days where, you know, I wanted to make sure everything was working, but I just had to trust them. And that kind of comes down to, you know, hiring right to begin with, but also training the right people and empowering them to do that job.
But what about because since you're the main founder, you're, like you said, you're the brand of it. You have the certain vision that you want for, we'll just say, any business. And are you trying to input that vision into other people's heads? Because it's hard for everyone to always see exactly how you see it. And if you're away for months at a time, couldn't they start taking that vision where you don't want it to go?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, what it really comes down to is, you know, we hire people that basically, you know, they buy in, you know, they're empathetic to the cause. They know exactly what's expected of them. And even though I'm not in, like, you know, for example, my gym, I don't go in the gym to do it. I talk to those people constantly, you know, so it would be just like anybody who had a virtual assistant that talks, you know, through email or by the phone. That vision can be distorted, but my job now is more of a customer service role. So, you know, instead of doing the day-to-day, you know, task operations of working people out or going through everything, I'm the recon. I'm reaching out, you know, hey, how are you doing? How are your results? What's going on? I can send those emails and I hear really quick if something goes south. So, you know, it allows people to still be able to get a hold of me when they need to, but really I'm putting a lot of faith in those people. And I told the story on my second podcast. I mean, that wasn't something that just happened right off the bat. I mean, once we started putting employees in, I made some really poor hires right off the bat. And it didn't hurt my business, but it hurt me personally because it was, you know, really good friends of mine who let me down. And, you know, I learned valuable lessons about how to hire the right people and to trust your gut when it really comes down to it. There's always going to be something that you could do better. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, that's why we got into the business we got into to begin with. But if you can hire some quality people and leave a little bit of interpretation up to them, as hard as it is to let go a little bit, you know, that's what's really going to allow you to have the freedom you're looking for in your job and your business. Otherwise, I mean, you're going to be that micromanager. You're going to be in there all the time. You know, it was hard for me at first to let it just flow, but seeing how it's gone and how people have responded, you know, I actually removed myself and business went up 25%. So that was hard to argue with right off the bat. But as we continually grow and everybody's happy and all my feedback is excellent, I'm going to keep doing it. And then if something bad happens, obviously I can step back in because I'm not too far removed from it and everybody still has an understanding of how things work.
Now, Ryan, in round two, Joe and I talked about my experience trying to replace myself in one of my past businesses, and I pretty much spilled my guts about my epic failure in that regard. And basically what I concluded, one of the worst things I was doing, and this isn't what caused it to go downhill, but one of the things I look back on that I was doing was I wasn't necessarily micromanaging, but I was keeping too close tabs on what was going on. So while the assistant that was working with me wasn't aware that I was there, I was constantly lurking, and I ended up spending almost as much time just because I was so paranoid about what might be happening if I, you know, take my eye off for a second. But at the same time, you even mentioned that you're still somewhat, you know, you have your finger on the pulse just in case. How do you find the balance of what's too much and what's too little?
Well, in our particular situation, since, you know, most of my experience in business is both online and offline. So I kind of have both sides of the fence there. When I have an online business, it's really tough for me to make sure that, you know, things are going the way I want to, because there's a certain amount of stuff that I get done. And obviously I work at a big pace, you know, so I'm a lot on your side on that deal. Like I probably get in there too much and don't let my people do as much as I probably should, even though I give them tremendous amounts of flexibility. But on the offline business, you know, I'm available by phone and by email, where everybody goes into the business to actually do what they do. So my people really reach out to me and tell me how great it is, more than, you know, I'm having to reach out to them for something, because they know it's an open door policy. And it's kind of weird, and it takes a little bit of trial and error to make sure you get that balance right. I don't know that there's a magic formula for it. You want your people that are doing the job to feel like they're empowered enough to do a good job. But, you know, we have, you know, a weekly lunch meeting where we bring everybody together and we talk about what's going on and we value their input. We make sure that they feel like they're just as much a part of it as we are. And, you know, we pay them really well to do that. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, it's not one of those situations where, you know, they're living off breadcrumbs and we're expecting the world out of it. I mean, we pay really good money for what we have and the people appreciate that. So, you know, there is a give and take, but it's a tough balance and you're going to fail before you get it right. And I mean, we did the exact same thing. You know, it's been a trial and error type of a situation from day one.
Well, you hear all the time, you hear, like you just said, you started doing that and your business increased by 25%. Tim Ferriss talked about that in his book. But how long does this process take before you start seeing that? Like, how, if someone did start doing this, how long should they expect to start seeing results before they say, well, maybe I just hired the wrong person or maybe I'm doing something wrong?
I give a 3-month window before it starts to show. You know, whether it's going to pay for itself or not, you know, by 3 months, it should be, you know, business should be picking up. You should be able to be taking care of more of your entrepreneurial tasks where somebody's doing the day-to-day work, you know, and that works on both sides of the fence. I mean, if you hire somebody to do your job and you just ghost out of there and you're not doing anything, you can't expect your business to grow. But, you know, most people, you know, when they replace themselves right off the bat, I mean, you're going to realize, I mean, we're all working the same way. I mean, we work long hours. We put a lot of thought into it. You know, we stop working, we go home, we keep working. You know, I have a home office. You know, I have an upstairs office that's only work, and then I try not to bring it downstairs. But every single night, as soon as everyone starts going to bed, the laptop's up, I'm doing more work. You know, as soon as you bring somebody in that their job is only to do that job, you're going to free yourself up so much more. You should be able to drive the business forward by yourself. But if that person isn't the right person, you need to get in there and get in front of that situation early. And even 3 months, it's not going to take 3 months for you to notice whether it's the wrong person or not. You should see immediate feedback from your audience or your clientele if that's a good fit or not.
Okay, so for someone who is just starting out, should they be thinking, okay, I want to start one business where everything's automated so then I can go and start another business that is actually what I enjoy doing? Is that what you're kind of doing right now?
Basically, yeah. I mean, what it comes down to is most people jump the gun when it comes down to trying to do this because it's a systems play. And a lot of people don't like to take the time to write procedure manuals and to do step-by-step guides for their own business because that's not a sexy part of business. No one's excited to go to work today and you're going to write a 15-page procedure manual about how to do an AWeber email. You know, but at some point, you know, you're going to have to get that stuff done if you want to replace yourself. You know, what a lot of people do right off the bat is it's, you know, we kind of talked about that bright, shiny object. I mean, you hear about everybody who's a successful entrepreneur, you know, they work the 4-hour work week or they have this army of assistants or, you know, all this travel and all this stuff. And it seems like that should be the goal when really the goal is freedom and it's however you define it. But a lot of people getting started, you know, you may not do this job forever. You may not have this business forever. And once you get into business, you might find you have all sorts of other passions. You know, like I would meet tons of people as my personal training career from all different walks of life. I have tons of fantastic stories about people coming up from nothing and doing all sorts of fantastic work. I've been able to be involved in, you know, home building and, you know, flipping houses. I've been able to get into lots of other situations because I've had this freedom because I took the time to do those systems and work it through. But it never really was my goal to stay 100% working in my business. And that's really what I try to impress on people is that it's all about conscious design from the beginning. If you know, you see a lot of blogs and they're one man shows, you know, that person may have made a decision. You know, like I have, and I talk a lot about it, is that I want to be doing daily content and podcasts. I don't want to be doing the back end stuff. I have people that do the SEO and, you know, the blog upkeep and the commenting and all that other back end stuff, so I can focus on what I want to do. And as long as you're focused and you're really clear on your goals and your intentions, what you want out of your business, it makes everything a lot more easy to put the roadmap together to get there.
So, Ryan, we can kind of piece together this puzzle. You have people. You have people everywhere. You have people in your physical business. You have people in your online business. You have people working for you. So this is kind of a two-part question. Where do you find your online people? Do you have anywhere else other than the Elance and the Odesk and those kind of places? And then where do you find your in-person people? Do you have any kind of ninja tricks other than just the typical classified ads or searching the job boards kind of thing?
Yeah, that's actually a great question because my answer is not going to be very typical. On the online situation, I like Replace Myself. It's John Jonas, and he runs a fantastic system, and his assistants are out of the Philippines. There's a couple of other situations. I know Chris Ducker has a similar type of a system where they do the pre-screening and get out there. But I've had fantastic luck in the Philippines. And really, there's a couple of different reasons. But, you know, the most part is they speak English most of the time as a second language. But, you know, the communication is a little bit easier that way. And they have a lot more input as far as, you know, they're not going to tell you one thing and then just ghost out. They're going to be embarrassed if they don't know how to do it, but they're willing to learn how. They really appreciate working for an American company. And a lot of times, I mean, you know, I've never been to the Philippines, but when I see it on TV, I'm just blown away. But, you know, I know that the money that I pay my personal assistant, I have a personal assistant and then a project manager. My personal assistant runs everything I do, and I pay her a considerable amount of money, even for the U.S. based standard. And that's enough money for her to support her entire family. And that's amazing. You know, just to be able to be involved with somebody like that, you know, is just blows my mind. But, you know, on the offline business, what I do is I actually pick people out of two places really are my favorite places to grab people. Starbucks and people who wait tables.
Wait, tell us about the, how do you get people at Starbucks? Tell us that.
You're talking about people that work at Starbucks?
Okay. Yeah, people that work at Starbucks. You know, there's a couple of jobs, you know, in really out there. You think about it, like where are people, you know, pretty energized. They work at a fast pace. They've had a lot to learn and they work really good, you know, in all types of situations. You know, people that wait tables, you know, they have, you know, who knows who's coming through, and their whole job is it's a sales job. You know, the people at Starbucks, it's a little bit different because they're making good money. But, you know, a lot of people that go through there, I mean, you choose how you are going to be in the world. I mean, you can have a great day or you can have a bad day. You check it at the door, you know, but there's a great hiring process that goes on at Starbucks and just finding some people who, you know, really are top notch quality people. And I've had three people that I've actually pulled out of a Starbucks and, you know, put them to work and doing, you know, what basically they went to school for. Because let's face it, guys, you know, I mean, not everybody, you know, has an entrepreneurial mind. They're, you know, like Gary Vaynerchuk was saying the other day, there's really good twos and threes out there. You know, and what we've been able to do is find some people who don't mind working for somebody, but have a great spirit and are a lot of fun to be around and really appreciate the opportunity.
Wow, that's a... That is a ninja trick. I've never thought of that, never heard anybody say that, but that's pretty fantastic. So what restaurant have you found the most success at, if any?
Texas Roadhouse is awesome.
You know, yeah.
And, you know, aside from the fact that they try to get me fat on their rolls, you know, they it's the restaurants that they move fast. Because, you know, especially in the personal training business, I mean, you know, it's pretty active. I mean, we move a lot. We have a lot of stuff going on. And a lot of what I do in-house is more, you know, like customer retention type stuff, you know, with people who are doing contests or, you know, people who are, you know, getting in there in the trenches. I like to take someone who has a great work ethic and a, you know, awesome attitude and give them the tools that they need to be successful. You know, we'll get them, you know, certified if they want to be a trainer. If they want to do, you know, web marketing and things like that, I'll teach them how to do that. I'll show them how to do it and be successful my way, you know, instead of them coming in with a bunch of bad habits. Because really, you know, most things can be taught if the attitude is right. And if you're bringing people in knowing that they're going to be part of your family, not just some temporary hire or something, you know, small time or short time, it makes a huge difference. And if you can bring somebody in, I mean, you know, what does a waiter make? I mean, not enough. And you can come in and you start somebody out at $25 an hour to help you in the gym. They can work part-time hours. They don't have to work late at night. You give them all the tools to be successful and give them a career. It's a slam dunk.
Well, you say you like to impress on people your ideas. So these people you bringing in, are you trying to show them, hey, this is how I do it, you can do it too? Or you kind of figure, hey, these people will never start anything, they're the perfect fit to just be an employee forever?
No, it's speed of the leader when it comes down to it. I mean, I love training people. I love coaching people. And really, that translates into what I do online. But a lot of what we want them to do, because, I mean, let's face it, you know, the best people leave. You know, so there may be a time where, you know, they branch off and do something else or they start their own. You know, that's fine. I mean, you take that gamble. I mean, it's just like hiring any one of us. I mean, you know, we might do good for a little bit, but we have that entrepreneurial spirit. Nothing's going to keep that from us. If we have that or we get that spark, we're gone. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it really just depends on your mind frame and what you're looking to get at. But, you know, if you're willing to take the chance on that person, you know, we never know who we're going to end up doing business with down the road. I mean, if we can teach these people to be rock stars, you know, it's all going to come full circle back. We've had, I'd say, you know, of the 8 or 10 people we've hired, we progressed 3 people into running their own business, which I think is awesome. And what we do with that is we actually license our boot camp and training materials to them, our training program to them. So even though it's, you know, Joe Blow Fitness, whatever, it's still all of our material, all of our workouts, and we're still able to help them and be a part of it. So in turn, we're creating another income stream and another way to make money just by helping people be better.
But what if, because you got fired because you were doing something, like you were a personal trainer at one gym, but you were doing like consulting on the side. Is that going on with your employees as well?
Not necessarily. I mean, if it does, it does. I mean, you know, the reason why we got fired was more of a situation where we were working as consultants for a corporate gym. It's just a franchise, you know, whatever, 24/7 gym. And we went to him and said, hey, you know, a lot of these guys on the West Coast are getting into this boot camp thing, this group training. It's cheaper and more people can do it. We think we should start something like that. It'd be a great idea. What do you think? Well, they just said, nah, that idea will never catch on. That's stupid. Well, I'd already seen it work. So we started getting out there and doing some other, you know, outside the gym work and doing that. You know, when somebody comes to me with an idea like that, I don't care if it's even subpar. I mean, if it seems like it's going to be an opportunity for them to grow their business or to try and learn from that experience, we do it. And it's just a different type of a relationship between what we have. Is the door open for them to do that? Sure. But at the same time, you know, the way we structure our program, you know, it's going to be very tough for them to replicate what we do in the gym because we have such a unique concept gym to go down the street and open up something without, you know, spending a ton of money and a ton of risk that is just not done in our business very often. So go ahead.
Well, I guess in hindsight, that firing worked out for you. But say, what about someone else who's in like a corporate type position and they're doing something on the side that may be a conflict of interest at their day job? Do you recommend doing that because it worked out for you?
That's a great question. You know, it really comes down to the individual. I mean, you know, I love and I hate the term wannapreneur. You know, a lot of people you talk to, I mean, I get calls every day. I just got off a call from somebody who, you know, wants to start their business. But when you talk to them, you're like, well, how bad do you want this? They're like, eh, it'd be a nice idea is basically what it comes down to. You know, they're not ready. And you have to make sure that, I mean, if you're willing to get out there and give that decision legs and move forward, you've got a great chance of making it work if you're willing to put the effort behind it. But a lot of people, they're not in a situation where it's going to work out as amazingly, you know, fantastic as it did for me. And, you know, people out there need to realize that. That wasn't without waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning, working all day, literally doing the marketing and payroll and everything in the middle of the day, and then getting home about 8 o'clock at night and doing it 6 days a week for 2 years. I mean, I put in lots of hours, lots of work, and a lot of people just aren't willing to do that. You know, so when you are faced with that situation, could you do it? Of course you could do it. You know, is it the right situation for you? That's where we need to probably have a further conversation on that. I wouldn't necessarily recommend quitting your job just with nothing and having no options and just expecting it to work. But at the same time, if you're willing to put the effort behind it, it's out there for all of us. But, you know, looking at someone in corporate America who, you know, loses their job, you know, like a Pat Flynn example, you know, somebody who knows it's coming, maybe has a little bit of severance. You know, there are lots of opportunities to start making money online, or at least get a downline started real fast and start moving in that direction. You just really have to weigh on, you know, whether that's the right decision for you based on what you're willing to put in, and just follow your gut.
Well, this question may veer a little off topic, but Dan and I, we're both married, and you're married as well. If you're working these 16 plus hours, how do you balance that family life with what you're, I'm curious for my sake, just, and I'm sure Dan is too. How do you balance that and keep your family together as well?
When we first started and we were putting everything in, it was terrible, because, I mean, literally I would go to work before my daughter would wake up, and I would get home after she was asleep. My wife would bring her up during the day, and I would get to play with her, and we'd trade off and see her and whatnot. But that was one of the most important driving forces on me fixing, you know, the business to replace myself as fast as I could. When we had our second child, things were completely different. I was basically retired at that point, so it wasn't any big deal. You know, I wish I had a fantastic answer for that, but, you know, the way we do it now, you know, we put our kids in the best school that we can find. I mean, that's just hands down. That's why I decided I wanted to be in business, was to give my kids an opportunity to see the world through a different lens. You know, and now that we're able to do that, I mean, we put our kids in the same school that the NBA players in town do. We spend a fortune doing it. And they go to school about 9 o'clock. I get them ready for school, drop them off. I have the whole day to do it. We pick them up about 4:30. I have a good solid work day. And then the rest of the time is family. And I block that time out, with the exception of, you know, cool interviews like this, to make sure that, you know, the evening time is really 90% family. And then, you know, the kids go to school, or the kids go to bed about, you know, 8:30. My wife and I have the time after that to kind of spend talking about the day or what's going on or business or whatnot. And then I'm a night owl, so I stay up a little bit later and usually bust out a couple of blog posts. You know, but the way that it really has balanced itself is, you know, and I really try to get everybody to do this right off the bat, is what I call reverse scheduling. Is basically taking your schedule and blocking out the times that are important to you and your family first, and then filling in work around that. Because nice. Otherwise, you end up running all over the place. Or you get mad because you're trying to write a blog post and the kids are all over you, or your wife's talking to you about who knows what, and you're not focused, and then it's garbage. You know, if you knew that you had from 9 o'clock to 4 o'clock to work, and you were going to go to the gym, and you were going to listen to your podcast or learn while you were working out, you know, and then come back and bust out some more work, you know exactly what you're going to get done during the day. Instead of just run and gun, trying to figure it out and letting it be overwhelming, you have those time blocks set up to where family's taken care of, check. Wife is taken care of, check. You know, I've got time for me and, you know, bettering myself in there, check. I know when I'm going to eat, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner. Everything's already in there, and then I can fill in work based on that.
Ryan, full disclosure, I was going to jump in there with when you were talking about finding the best schools, I was going to point out that you're in Oklahoma. Being a Texas guy, I was going to have to try to find some kind of joke about that. But you were given such good information, I didn't want to interrupt it. So thanks for that.
I won't even get started because I don't want anybody to get upset. But, you know, I mean,
no,
just saying.
It's in my blood that I had to say something. I'm sorry. I apologize.
OU Texas has gone pretty well for you guys the last couple of years, hasn't it?
There you go. See?
just saying.
No, you're absolutely right.
Touche.
Yeah, and then Joe's from who knows where, so he's...
Shut up.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah. So, Ryan, I want to know one more thing, kind of going back to the story that I was telling about my demise and my one attempt to replace myself. As I realized things were going downhill, I kind of removed the assistant and put myself back in place. But by then, it was kind of too late. I felt like I had been removed for long enough. I was not really out of touch, but I was out of practice, and I wasn't able to kind of turn things around as quickly as possible. Did you ever have an experience where you replaced yourself and then you had to step back in, and how did you keep it from just continuing the downfall?
Well, when we first got going and the first time I did this, you know, we hired some really great people that, you know, like I was telling you, the people that were really good friends of ours. And, you know, I trained them very well. We went through a great process. You know, they were much more qualified than I was, which was the real big kicker on this. I mean, they were degreed, they're certified trainers, they're fitness people, they were experienced. There was no reason why they shouldn't have been able to jump in and do a great job. And it just didn't click for them. We were moving at a different level. You know, we had, you know, it just didn't work out. So, you know, I ended up having to fire my best friend, who I've been friends with since 12 years old, for making basically sexual advances towards gym members, even though he was married and had kids. And, you know, great, appreciate you putting me in that situation, you know, but, you know, that was a tremendous blow, you know, and I had to step back in and do that. But the real big kicker on what we do is, you know, even though I might be gone for months at a time, I have a core group of people who have been personal training clients of mine for years. So every, you know, few months, this last time that I took a break, I was out from November till about, you know, this month, about July, you know, and I have some great people really, you know, have allowed me to be hands off and focus on my Unreasonable Entrepreneur blog and podcast, just tons of stuff. But I'll get back in there every now and then and just be a part of the gym. And whether that be, you know, doing some of the boot camp classes or training a couple of old clients just to get in there and catch up with them and see what's going on, I think it's really important to have your hands in it just enough, you know, because if you distance yourself 100%, you know, like for my situation, we have about 350 gym members. If they don't know who I am or I don't have any kind of outreach and I just show up one day like I'm, you know, king of the hill, that's going to cause a pretty good disconnect. You know, and that's a little bit tough. I mean, especially in the online world, you know, if you have a community manager that runs everything's writing blog posts and then all of a sudden you show up and it's a completely different style, you know, a different person, different voice, it's going to show. And, you know, if you can get in just enough to make your presence known and to make sure that you're in there, I mean, I would say that's the first key. You know, the second one is just to get in front of that situation a little bit quicker. You know, when we found out that, you know, homeboy was, you know, making advances towards to girls. And I mean, do you guys have Hobby Lobby in Texas?
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Okay. For those of you guys who don't know who Hobby Lobby is, they're a privately owned, basically knickknack store that every one of their locations is five star. It's about 50,000 to 60,000 square feet. I mean, this guy's, you know, this is a multi-billion-dollar business. The heir to the Hobby Lobby throne is a member of my boot camp. He calls me and says, hey, you know, this guy's been hitting on my sister and she's really good friends with his wife. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, wow. Step into my office. You're fired. You know, it was same day. I mean, there was no hesitation on that at all. You know, we made sure that that wasn't going to go on. I mean, it was literally a 20-second decision on my part that he was gone. And, wow. You know, really, you know, hire slow, fire fast. If you take enough time to make sure that that's the person for you, and, you know, I have a set thing that I do with everybody who comes in. I mean, we need to make sure that they can have a conversation. They're a normal human being. They relate to us. You know, obviously they're qualified, but they have some empathy if something goes wrong. You know, we want them to understand that, you know, something may go wrong in the business, but I want you to feel bad about it because I want you to have some ownership of it. And this guy in particular, I broke my rules and he didn't have that. And it showed, you know, when a lot of people, you know, you would have started to see that kind of downward decline pretty fast. And, you know, the reason why I used the 3-month mark on that was that's about the time where he started to get a little bit disgruntled. It took literally a couple of days for me to pick out things I didn't like. Bang, got a phone call. You're gone. You know, so it's got to be fast. I mean, it's a plague. you know, when you get somebody in there that's sucking the life out of your business, that has to be remedied. Or, you know, like you said, you know, your business dies so fast and then you get back in there and it's just in shambles and it may not be salvageable at that point.
Right, right. Well, Ryan, I know we're running long, but before I let you go, I've got to ask you something completely off topic from the interview, but very on topic for you. You talked about how you were one of the first people to bring the boot camp style workouts to Oklahoma. And anyone who follows the fitness industry knows there's all kinds of latest fads and different trends going on in the workout world. Some are deals, some are duds. What do you think the next big thing in the fitness world is as far as workout styles go?
It's actually going to be a UFC style fitness where it's more like a fight fit kind of a the way they train online when you or not online, but you know, when you watch some of those behind the scenes UFC guys train, I mean, it's a hybrid between something like what we do where it's fast paced, it's high cardio, it's lots of reps, and a CrossFit style where it's about heavier weight and personal records. So you're going to see kind of a hybrid thing come out of that. And not so much like a kickboxing only or just a fitness class. It's going to be something kind of in the middle of that.
So you think like full contact or more like the grappling aspect of it?
More like a full contact that never gets to full contact. More like punching the bag.
Like sparring or something.
Yeah, just more along the lines of, you know, like tire flips, sledgehammer hits. You know, like it's really cool right now. People who think they're really tough, they do cardio with gas masks on, which they actually make them for retail, you know, to buy. I mean, that was kind of the fun, cool thing to do if you were hardcore and trying to do your cardio zone training for a while. But that's going to be the next big thing. And we're starting to see them pop up. I mean, one of the things that I kind of pride myself on is watching the trends, you know, whether it be internet business or anything, you know, along the lines of fitness. I mean, being from such a trendy industry when I got my start, you know, you have to be ahead of that stuff or you get left in the dust. Because, I mean, think about Tybo. You used to hear about Tybo every day.
Oh, yeah.
And he's gone now. I mean, I used to live down the street from the guy when I played hockey in California. And, I mean, he just watched his big black Hummer every day. I mean, that's what he did. I mean, because he was rolling in it, you know. And now, I mean, I haven't heard about him in forever. You know, the same thing will happen with boot camp. The same thing will happen with a lot of these fitness classes like Zumba and things like that. It all just comes full circle. And if you're ahead of the trends and you're doing quality work, you'll always be successful. I mean, it won't go away completely. But, you know, to really take advantage of some of the big stuff out there, you've got to get in front of those trends.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you sharing that with us, Ryan. Now, before we wrap up this interview, why don't you let everyone know kind of what you've got going on currently, maybe what's coming in the future, and then how they can get in touch with you or find out more about you once again.
Yeah, we've got a lot of great stuff going on at unreasonableentrepreneur.com. We've started off by, you know, kind of doing a little bit different on our podcast. I wanted to give some really good system knowledge right off the bat. So episode 4 through 9 is actually a step-by-step business building course. And what we're doing is we're actually taking a lot of that material and expanding on it into our membership site and my first book, which is called Normal Is Not Working. And both of those should be ready to launch here in the next probably 30 days. So lots of big stuff coming from us.
Awesome. And we'll definitely link to all of that in the show notes and a lot of the other things we talked about we'll link to as well. Ryan, we appreciate you coming on to the Showdown and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ryan.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Now, to find out more about this show and to see the show notes, check out entrepreneurshowdown.com. Leave us some feedback in the comment section and let us know what you think. And if you like what you've heard, do us a huge favor and head to the iTunes store and leave us a 5-star review. So with that, for my partner Joe Cassandra, I'm Dan Franks. We'll see you next week.